notwithstanding the fact that fruitless and wasteful expenditure and all of these type of things need to be looked at. But the reality of the situation is that the interest costs that Eskom is incurring has to be serviced, and the interest cost is a direct function of the new build program. And I think, as the Minister of Finance has said, a funding model for Eskom has to be identified. Otherwise,
I agree with you that the whole scenario and the whole model of Eskom has to be reconsidered, and that hopefully the new board will be doing, because demand has changed, everything has changed. What was your reason for contacting President Zuma and at the State of the Nation to discuss the issue of renewables? Why would you not have discussed that with your minister? What did you expect the president to do?
We did not contact the president.
You indicated, I might have misunderstood you, that you were asked the question, have you ever had any discussions with President Zuma?
Yes, sir.
And you indicated you had a discussion with him on this issue.
Yes, sir.
So it begs the question, what else did you... You understand that when we are speaking about the involvement of President Zuma, the involvement of the Gupta family, the involvement, that it opens the question as to what else did you discuss with President Zuma?
As I mentioned before, sir, I did not request the meeting. I was requested to attend the meeting, which I did. I provided my input, and that was it.
I'm sorry, I didn't... Was it? I missed that evidence then, because it seemed to be that... Was it at Parliament? Was it at the State of the Nation?
No. I said following the State of the Nation address, where the President had announced that Eskom would be signing the power purchase agreements with independent power producers, Eskom still was reluctant to sign the power purchase agreements. The Minister of Energy, the Minister of Public Enterprises engaged. We engaged both of them at the... I'm not too sure whether it was the Minister of Energy or whether it was the Minister of Public Enterprises, arranged a meeting with the President, and we then went to brief the President around Eskom's problems relating to the signing of the power purchase agreements.
Was Minister Lynn Brown aware of that discussion?
I think Minister Brown and Minister Jo-Mann Peterson were actually at the
meeting. At the meeting. Because we've got other evidence of a previous board chairman, Mr. Zola Tsotsi, being summoned to President Zuma's residence in Durban and given certain instructions. You might have heard of those, that evidence as well. Did that ever happen to you?
No.
To anyone that you're aware of?
No.
So you indicated in the questioning by journalists in quite a dismissive fashion, you used the word soprification. What did you mean by that? Soprification. It seems to be soap operification. It seems that all this evidence that is in the public domain, the Gupta leaks, it is all soprification. It's fiction in your mind. Would you say it's fiction?
No, I think the comment was made relating to the specific allegations that were being levied against myself relating to Trillian McKinsey.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
I said it was relating to the comment was made specifically relating to my involvement in these transactions relating to the guarantee, the prepayment, the McKinsey Trillian transaction, the G9 report, the Oliver Wyman report, and all of these other media reports that sensationalize the issues compared to the evidence that we provided today.
But you haven't provided all those reports in your evidence. Are you referring to those reports also as being fiction?
No. I'm just saying
that... But those media reports were based on those reports, were they not?
As I am saying, if you look at the G9 report, for example, the G9 report was issued, but as I understand it now, I think it's been withdrawn, if you want to call it that. It was issued for one purpose, and it was used for another purpose completely. So that's the context within which we make the comment. I think what we are saying is, if you look at what perception the media is creating versus what the paper trail is suggesting, is that there is a disjuncture between the two. And that's what it's meant to.
National Treasury recommended a forensic audit. You appeared before Parliament and there was a whole discussion around the issues and your difference of approach. I don't know if you were there, but the approach of Eskom versus National Treasury, there was huge debate about the Tegeta coal contract. Were you part of that, those discussions at Parliament as well?
I recall attending a SCOPA meeting where we were required to speak about the PwC report, if I recall correctly. But I think that was the only meeting that I was present at where National Treasury and Eskom were debating, presenting, relating to Tegeta.
And the PwC report had red flagged Tegeta already. That report in an earlier contract, yet that PwC report seemed to have been ignored by Eskom when they engaged Tegeta. Are you aware of that?
If I recall correctly, again, the PwC, the first PwC report was done as part of an internal audit review. Internal audit had come to the conclusion that they did not have the technical expertise to undertake this review and therefore outsourced it to PwC. And when the PwC selection was made, it selected Tegeta as well as, I think, four other mines. So I think there was five mines that were selected in total. They had raised certain red flags. Management had, I think, addressed some of them. This was before I got there, that this PwC report, I think, was done. I only got to know about the PwC report when National Treasury actually wrote to us and said, can we have a copy of this report? And at that stage, I then engaged with the internal audit team and asked them for the report. They submitted the report, and then I engaged the primary energy team and said, guys, what did you do with all these findings? And that's when we, and the primary energy team resolved the findings. Subsequent to that, we got PwC backing to confirm that the findings that have been fixed by management was indeed fixed.
One of the issues that was a concern was the standard of the coal from the Brakfontein colliery. And you indicated earlier to us that at one stage Mr. Corcoran, we ask him tomorrow, suspended. And that suspended the delivery of Tegeta Brakfontein coal because it was not up to standard. And that had been a problem right from the word go. But then the scientists were suspended. Are you aware of that? And that there's a scientist that is still on suspension, Mr. Mark van der Riet.
As part of the submissions to SCOPA, I think we did allude to those facts. But as I said, I think those happened as I just got there. So I was not part and parcel of the actual exercise that happened.
But it's not in your submission to us today, those issues relating to Tegeta and the problems with the Brakfontein mines, that history. You didn't think it necessary to mention it to us?
No, not really.
But you took great pains to explain why it was necessary and why it was justifiable to have the Tegeta mines involved and the optimum. You took a lot of trouble to explain that, but you didn't give the full history. The PwC report, the problems with Brakfontein colliery, the fact that Mr. Koch himself suspended them for a short while, but within 5 days, they were reinstated. And Eskom's top scientist and Miss Charlotte Ramavona, another top scientist, coal scientist, they were suspended. Are they still on suspension?
Sir, I'm not too sure.
They are. Let me tell you, they are still on suspension. Is that not a concern? Maybe it's human resources. Your top scientists have been suspended for casting aspersions on a Gupta-related coal, Tegeta coal from Brakfontein.
Sir, Sir, I'll be of limited use to provide a response to that question.
Sorry, you?
I would be of limited use to provide a response to that question. Maybe you can pose it to Mr.
But it
Koko.
Adds to the overwhelming evidence of the support that Tageta got from ESCOM. Do you not agree?
I could agree if I was part two of the exercise that suspended them and
are
I understood
why. Are you disputing that they have been suspended?
No, sir, I am not. I just said that I was the one who told you that they were suspended.
No, you never told us they were suspended. That those scientists were suspended. You never told us they were suspended.
No, I did not.
You told us that the license of Brakfontein was suspended.
The coal supply agreement, yes.
But why has no one, ESCOM, told us the status of those two top scientists that are still on suspension? It's almost 2 years.
Well, in terms of the documentation the documentation covers the topics that I was requested to cover. In terms of the submission to SCOPA that related specifically to the PwC report, that was disclosed to SCOPA at the time.
My colleagues are saying I should wind up, so I need to just confirm and say to you that whilst you have assisted me with that lengthy documentation, there's far more. There's so much more. And it plays into everything that we've suspected from the word go as to a narrative that is put out. There's a booklet, I'm sure you've read that booklet. The overwhelming and growing body of evidence has been built. It suggests that power vested in the president, it's President Zuma, certain ministries, and the boards and executives of SOCs, and in this case ESCOM, has been misused to benefit the interests of connected individuals and entities, and most prominently, the Gupta family. Now, Treasury recommends a forensic audit to establish why ESCOM gave and continues to give preferential treatment to Tageta by not enforcing key conditions of the coal supply contracts, and why ESCOM, through its former chief executive, Brian Molefe, gave assurances that the Brakfontein Colliery supplied and continues to supply coal that is not in accordance with the coal supply agreement, despite ample evidence that there was non-compliance. And those are what the scientists have said. So that, I believe, I support what Mr. Gordhan said about the breaches. The public protector found serious breaches of the Public Finance Management Act as set out. In addition to that, Mr. Singh, that clause that I read to you from the Companies Act requires a higher standard from you, the fiduciary duty, a higher standard, you as a chartered accountant, as I read that to you. And I would agree with Mr. Gordhan that an application should be brought against all directors involved in what has happened at ESCOM to have the boards, including yourself, declared delinquent directors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Swart. Honorable Kungube.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good evening, Mr. Singh. Let's go to December, around the current year. What was the object of this contract? In articulating that, also just share with us what gave rise to this contract.
The nexus of the contract emanated from security of supplier risks that was identified by the Group Executive Generation, Mr. Koko, relating to the Optimum Coal Mine going into business rescue.
Security risk.
Security of supply.
Can you elaborate on that?
The meaning of security of supplier risks, Honourable Member, is the non-availability of coal. So,
which station was under threat?
That was the I think it was the Arnot power station relating to this one. Let me just have a look, see quickly. So this is the Hendrina power station, sir.
Who was supplying that station?
I would think that there was a number of mines that were supplying, but I would think that the security...
Did you list them?
I don't have them offhand at this stage, sir.
Those are the things we are trying to interrogate.
Sir, as I explained...
So remember, this is in your submission. So the questions are asked related to your submission. It takes your responsibility to make sure that all the questions related to what you submit, you're ready to answer. Security risk, supply to Henry's power station, I'm simply asking an elementary question, which who are supplying those?
Sir, with all due respect, I do not have the, I do not know the answer to that question, as it really, as it's an operational question.
But you came to engage us on that?
Because I was requested to do so, sir.
I'm sure you get my point. You came to engage us on that, and you put that as one of your sections on which you want to engage us. And you don't know which, as we speak, which actually mines were supplying that station. But let's leave it there. Right? So, because, and then, what is the, what then was the purpose of the contract?
As I was explaining, sir, it was to mitigate the potential shortage of coal for the Hendrina Power Station that was identified by the Group Executive Generation. The solution was outlined in a memo from the Department of Minerals, particularly the Director General, that effectively said that they were doing a whole lot of stuff to enable the acquisition by Tegeta of Optimum to be concluded. And
just a point, sorry, Mr. Singh. If you can slowly walk with us. How was this hoped to be achieved? If you can give practical steps there, so that we're clear, security identified. Now here is a contract. This is how, in a more practical and a crude way, it was intended to be achieved. Just give us a specific example. How was this intended to be resolved in specific terms?
So if you look at the intention of the letter of Mr. Koko, he identified the risk relating to the Optimum coal mine being in business rescue. And that was one of the things that he highlighted, because if they were in business rescue and not supplying coal to Eskom, there would be a supply.
What method was going to be used to solve that? Just share that with us.
So in his mind, he needed to raise this with the Department of Minerals for them to assist in any way they could. With the Competition Commission approvals and DMR approvals that are required to conclude the transaction between Tegeta and the Optum and Glencore for the purchase.
How did Tegeta become relevant in this scenario?
They were the potential purchasers of Optimum coal mine.
Based on what?
I would assume that the business rescue practitioners had identified them as a potential buyer.
I want you to get. So you assume that the business practitioner did what?
Identified a potential buyer, which was Tegeta.
It was identified by business practitioner?
I would assume so, sir.
You are assuming?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, I guess now we move from the basis that the business practitioner identified Tegeta as a potential buyer. Let's work together there. It was a potential buyer of what?
Of the Optimum coal mine.
Remember, the heading says pre-purchase of coal. It doesn't say pre-purchase of optimum. Can you explain that?
So the basis of the transaction was never to purchase optimum. It was to ensure that we paid Tegeta for, or prepaid Tegeta for supply of coal from optimum. Tegeta would then use those proceeds to settle the liabilities that existed within Optimum Coal Mine to ensure that Optimum Coal Mine was a going concern and would come out of business rescue.
So, if I'm listening to you, you're not talking about Tegeta buying Optimum, am I right?
This transaction is not relating to Tegeta buying Optimum, no.
But how did then Tegeta ended up buying Optimum in the process?
One of the things that the DMR had identified in their letter was that there were some historic liabilities that needed to be addressed. And in their response, they suggested that if Eskom could consider a pre-purchase of coal for a period of 1 year to the value of about $1.6 billion, that would assist the potential buyers to settle these liabilities.
That would assist optimum buyers?
Yes.
Who became optimum buyers in this instance?
Tegeta.
So Tegeta, which was primarily meant to supply coal through Optimum, ended up becoming a buyer of Optimum. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And this is based on the proposal by the practitioner. Am I correct?
As I understand, it says that it was supported by the practitioner.
But that's what you said, by the way.
Yes, sir.
Am I correct? Yes. That is according to paragraph 2.2 of AS3, am I correct?
That's correct.
What if the practitioner says no such proposal was made? What would be your response?
I would have to say that I would have to go on what is written in the documents.
As a chief financial officer, Mr. Swartz spoke about your fiduciary duties. This, according to the submission by Mr. Koko, is based on a proposal by the practitioner. I want to go on record to say the practitioner will say no such proposal was made by them. And the sort of obligation that it would have given to you, if you exercise your fiduciary duty as a CFO, I want to argue that you would have been able to pick that up. And I'm putting as a matter of fact that the practitioner will say no such proposal was made by them. How did you miss that as a CFO?
Well, as I said, from my perspective, you do place reliance on our colleagues. I was not party to the...
You're going back, Mr. Singh, to put your responsibilities on the shoulders of other people. I'm saying to you, by the way, remember, I want to, if you disagree with me, as a chief financial officer, the position of the finances of this institution, what is potential, be negative or positive, the person who's supposed to be a thought leader there is yourself. Am I correct?
That is true, sir.
So any behavior, whenever you look at it as a CFO, you look at it from the point of its financial implications. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
So whatever behavior that happens, your expertise is to look at it from its financial impact, whatever. Now, I'm saying, here is an exercise by Mr. Koko making a submission based on the fact that the practitioner made a proposal. And I'm putting it on record that the practitioner will say that was never done. They made no such proposal. Now, I'm saying you as a CFO, knowing the financial implication of this, don't you think if you do your due diligence work, you were supposed to have discovered this because you knew who the practitioner was by that time?
I was not aware of the practitioners at the time. So.
Let me check if I understand you. OCM was under rescue, am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Did you know that?
Yes, sir, I knew that at the time.
But you didn't know under whose care?
No, sir.
All what you know that they were under rescue?
Yes, sir.
Surely you must agree that's a joke, eh? It doesn't make sense. But anyway, to you, I've been listening to you, everything makes sense to you for the purpose of giving your own answers. Again, I agree with whoever said you're not taking this inquiry serious, because it cannot happen that the chief financial officer knows that such as an important company like OCM is under rescue and you don't know under whose hands that rescue is. But we are also participating. We are participating in your capacity as a chief financial officer for conclusion of this deal. You are participating. Remember, you said it is yourself who gave an advice on the guarantee in your capacity as the office that you are holding. In doing so, you said, if you check that section is where you're analyzing risk. You can go to that section in your document. Where you're analyzing risk and everything, you come to a view that there's a need for a guarantee for the prepayment. And now all the things are analyzed, the suspensive conditions, and all those things. And the Makoko document is the basis for the whole process, right? Now the only way, in my view, you could have been able to analyze the risk and actually go to the program is when you would have gone to all the necessary details of this document, amongst others the proposal by the practitioner, and you don't know that the practitioner did not know anything about this submission. That's the first point. Let's go on record, you don't know. That's the first disgrace in as far as your work is concerned. At least you admit to that. The next point is that in paragraph 3.4.2 of your US trade, OCM, BRP, and Kortfontein and other relevant were supposed to give security. Am I correct?
Which paragraph?
I mean, when you talk about suspensive conditions, amongst other things, in the arena of your suspensive conditions, it's in your paragraph 3.4.2. Can you read your history? Where a security was supposed to be given? Can you go through that?
Yes, 3.4.2.
You agree with that?
Yes.
Good. It was supposed to be given by these institutions. Will you, if I say to you, they had no knowledge of that, what would be your comment?
I think this was... This would have been something that would have been negotiated.
I'm saying, if I say to you, they had no knowledge of that, what would you say?
I guess it would be news to me as well, sir. I said it would be news to me as well.
Be news to you?
Yes, sir.
Number two, don't you think in exercise of your due diligence as a CFO, you're supposed to have gone to that extent?
Maybe I should have, sir.
Let's move again. In other words, under those circumstances, it doesn't make sense to say those institutions would have given commitments to Tegeta. In other words, whatever Tegeta would be saying in the process of concluding this deal would not be based on anything if one, the practitioner, never made those proposals. Two, these institutions never made this commitment because they knew nothing about this submission. So whatever then Tegeta was saying was not based on anything. What would be?
So I understand and know that there is a practice within ESCOM that whenever a coal supply agreement is concluded, there must be a evidence of a mine, or two, there must be evidence of a supply.
No, succinct. I just want us to be pointed. We're talking about Tegeta. We are dealing with Tegeta with based on underlying principles. Amongst other principles or factors is the fact that OSM, BRP, Brakfontein, whatever that company, let me check that name, would have actually given security. These are elements of the suspensive conditions. Tegeta's proposals, in whatever form they were making, they would have based this on this. And I'm saying, if, as a matter of fact, now I'm putting it on record, that these companies or this did not know. So the Tegeta proposals would be baseless from the onset in the long up initio.
As I was starting to respond, sir, as I said, you know, there's a standing practice in ESCOM that any coal supply, for any coal to be supplied to ESCOM, you need to have, one, a coal mine, two, an agreement in place that allows you to have access to coal.
And between who and who?
The supplier of the coal and yourself, and then you can own supply to ESCOM. So as I was alluding to earlier, it is my view that, and Mr. Koko can confirm this tomorrow, that there existed an agreement between the OCM and Tegeta.
Just hold it there. Again, I'm going to make this submission. If I say to you, during that time, no sale agreement was signed, what would you say?
So again, I would say that it is my understanding that that is the practice.
Let's not talk about the understanding and the practice. I'm saying, if I say to you during that time, no sale agreement was signed, what would be your comment?
I would say I would accept that, sir.
Okay.
I'm just working with you on this guarantee. Again, if I say, if you look at the paragraph, it's 3.1.11. During this time, it can be argued that an update was sent in early December confirming that no deal had been concluded. Do you remember that interaction? Do you remember that update?
No, sir.
You don't remember. I'll tell you why I'm asking you these questions as we move. Now, you see what is interesting in this process, Mr. Singh? You, in your submission, assert that based on your risk analysis. Now, the question is, if you knew none of these things, which areas were you assessing your risk, were informing your risk? If you knew none of these, what then informed the basis for your risk proposal? Can you share that with us?
I think the...
Let me say, before I even ask that, don't you think these were fundamental to be known in your risk analysis?
Can I respond?
Yes.
Okay. The responses that are contained in the statement are from a financial risk perspective. So
I know the questions I'm asking. I always insist that you must answer the question I'm asking. I've raised issues of omissions here with you. And I'm asking you, don't you think knowledge of these situations that I've shared with you now were critical as elements of your risk analysis?
Holistic risk analysis, yes, sir, I agree. But from a financial risk perspective, no, sir.
You know, you agree, but in whatever proposal of risk that you are making, you are proposing them not knowing this. Then let's proceed with you. Now the question that comes is that, what was the basis then of Tegeta ending up, one, qualifying to buy Optimum Coal Mine? What were the circumstances in practical and concrete terms that made it possible for Tegeta, against this background, to buy Optimum Coal?
So with all due respect, I can't respond to that question because I was not part of the negotiation process between Tegeta and Glencore.
No interest.
I was not part of the negotiation.
No. You are articulating a fact of not being part. The question I'm asking you, had no interest.
From an Eskom perspective, no.
Mr. Singh, you said you advised Eskom yourself, based on the risk analysis you made, to give a guarantee. All the elements of this guarantee involve the state of Tegeta, amongst others, if not in the main, state of Tegeta. The state of Tegeta and the viability of Tegeta, naturally, you cannot say to me it was not critical for you to give a credible advice to Eskom. Do you agree?
I think the credible advice that we gave was...
No, I'm saying...
Well, don't you think the state of Tegeta, financially and otherwise, was one of...
Your mic, please.
Okay.
Don't you think the state of Tegeta, financially and otherwise, amongst other things, was critical to know so that the advice you give Eskom is a credible one?
I would assume so.
Thank you.
At least you agree with that. Now, that's why then I'm asking the question. How did then, against the background I've already explained to you, no sales agreement, no deal concluded early December, the practitioner not knowing about the proposals by Makoko, Koko Matsila, and OSM and other relevant companies, not knowing that they were supposed to play a role in the suspensive conditions. Against that background, how did it become possible then for Tegeta to buy Optimum?
I wouldn't know that because I was not part of the negotiations between Glencore and
who was supposed to know?
I would respectfully suggest that it was not me, sir, because I was not negotiating the transaction between Glencore and Tegeta.
Let's say for comic sake, I think somebody must say that when he interacts with you, for comic purposes. Let's say you were not part of this process. Did you not have a role on the financial implications of this exercise?
I did.
I'm saying, let's say for comic purposes, because to me, for you not to play a role, it's comic. But let's play that comic space. Let's say you had no role in this exercise. You were not involved in this exercise. But the question I'm asking now, don't you think you had a role on the financial implications of this exercise?
Yes, I did, sir.
So what role did you play then? How did you play that role?
Firstly, sir, we assessed the net present value of the transaction. As you can see on the table there, is 238.9 billion. We looked at the financial risks associated with the guarantees. As we mentioned before, we had taken security over the assets. Also when we understood that there was a timing risk between the...
But you know what you're doing now? I'm sorry. I insist. You know, we're getting to this story because I was asking you a simple question. Knowing that you had to play a role on the financial implication of this exercise, here is Tegeta ending up buying Optima. I'm saying, what made it possible?
I wouldn't know, sir. Sir, I wouldn't know that, sir. No.
Okay. I think on this guarantee, then you can agree with me, it's a farce. Just a farce. Because if you don't know, actually, you know what is interesting? The critical elements that affect us for you to constitute a risk-based analysis, a risk-based analysis, so as to propose the guarantee, you were disconnected to all of them. But anyway, you made the proposal to ESCOM. Fine. That's how bold you are. And again, I'm going to show that boldness. I'm going to go to the 11th of April of that. You do make bold proposals. 9 on the 11th, that is 650, what, million?
659.
Yes. On the 11th of April. You were not there at night, am I right?
Yes, sir.
On the 2nd, you accept the task to do again risk stuff, am I right?
Sorry, on the 2nd?
Around this, there's a resolution. And then you are asked to do risk analysis, am I correct?
On the 12th, yes.
Huh?
On the 12th.
To analyze all the implications and the viability of everything. Am I correct?
I was asked to do a discount, security...
No, you're asked to do all the things that help to say whether this resolution is a sound resolution. Am I correct?
That was not my interpretation of what was asked.
What was your interpretation?
It was to provide a commercial rationale for the transaction, which I then provided to the BTC and was accepted.
Wait. What is the difference between a sound basis for this resolution and commercial rationale? What is the material difference?
In my view, I think the risk analysis would be...
Commercial rationale and sound basis for this resolution. What is the material difference?
In my view, sir, the commercial rationale would be a much narrower assessment of the transaction as it relates to commercial.
Is ESCOM not supposed to take resolution on sound basis?
Sir, I would respectfully submit that ESCOM had taken a resolution already. I would respectfully submit that ESCOM had already taken a resolution in the meeting of...
No. But what they did, intelligently so, they knew you had a role to play. They did not implement the resolution before asking you to do the work you did on the 12th. Am I right?
Agreed, and then I reported back to them.
So the point I'm making, the fact that you were not there when the resolutions are taken is no longer an issue, because those who took, they took it on condition that you were going to do the work you're supposed to do on the 12th.
Yes, but the same.
So that they can be convinced if indeed the resolution can work on sound basis.
Sir, my comment is that the very same people that took the resolution on the 11th was provided with the information that I had gathered on the 12th in a meeting on the 13th, which they then accepted.
So you are saying to us, on the 12th, you were able to, where is that page of the things you secured from your, is it page what? That discount and what page is that?
I will let you know now, sir.
You know the page thing. That's your page. That's your document. 26. Let's go there. Let's go there. Good. Paragraph 98. Am I correct? Yeah. You are saying on the 12th, you are told in the morning of the 12th. I was informed by Ms. Daniels on the 12th of April of the meeting, and that the meeting had resolved that myself as CFO, I'm required to perform the following. Negotiate a discount with Tegeta, obtain adequate security for the pre-purchase, ensure that the transaction made commercial sense for ESCOM. All these elements are to constitute a sound basis of the resolution, to demonstrate that a mind was applied before this resolution is implemented. Do you agree? Now you say, on the 12th, you were able to negotiate 3.5% discount, obtain adequate and appropriate security for the transaction, provided a rationale for the commission on the 12th. In other words, you are saying to this meeting, all these interfaces you made here, remember, none of these people expected to meet you on the 12th. Do you agree?
I would assume so.
You are going to initiate these interactions based on what you are being asked to do. And you are saying on the 12th you did this work and finished it.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible?
Yes, sir.
Okay. By the way, at some stage you were asked to give minutes of this meeting. What was your response?
I did respond to say that there were no minutes of these meetings.
Okay. At least there's something you can do. You can tell us with whom did you negotiate the discount. Is that okay?
As I said, I think it was either Ronica...
It can be either. You negotiated with somebody. Let's forget about minutes. You negotiated with somebody and obtained a discount.
I think the discount was negotiated by Ms. Nteta. Ms. Nteta was...
I want us to go on record on that. And this is very important. If you cannot tell us the minutes, at least tell us the specific person. So you're saying it's Mr.?
I think it was Ms. Ayanda Nteta.
Do you think? No, that's tricky. You were actually involved in a discount negotiation. It's not a supposition. Actually, it occurred. You cannot think it was. Tell this meeting who it was. I don't want to say you.
Well, I can categorically state that the 3.5% discount was agreed to between ESCOM and Tegeta, which was reduced into the contract that was signed between ESCOM and Tegeta.
By the way, that long before the 12th, the discount would have been secured. Do you agree?
No, sir. The first I heard...
You say no?
Yes.
We are going on record.
As far as I'm concerned, yes.
We'll have to verify that. Thank you. At least you are saying now, we agree that you are saying it's Ayanda Nteta. Who you negotiated discount with. That is record, that is actual.
If I recall correctly, yes, sir.
Thank you. Number two, you obtained adequate and appropriate security for the transaction. Can you tell us about that activity which led you to secure that?
I think here we engaged with Tegeta to understand what the net asset value of the organization was. They provided financial...
Who did you engage with in Tegeta?
Either Mr. Nath or Ms. Raghavan.
No. You engaged. You. There was no intermediary between yourself and these people. Who did you engage to obtain adequate and appropriate security for the transaction?
I think it was Ms. Veronica Rackman.
Who did you engage?
Ms. Veronica Rackman.
So remove things, because that's what you did. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Mr. Rone?
Veronica Rackman.
Does anyone hear what Ms. Singh is saying?
Ms. Veronica Rackman.
Then you will take the proper spelling of that. Now, the third point, provided a rationale for the commercial value that the transaction would have Eskom. How did you do that?
That was an exercise that we conducted we didn't actually quantify the benefit when we went to the meeting on the 12th. What I merely did was to say to the committee that if we had to burn diesel, it would be significantly higher compared to buying coal or producing energy from coal.
If somebody says the guarantee, I think PG or Mr. Pravin said this, if I'm correct, the guarantee was mainly for show to Baroda to assist together to buy optimum. What would you comment on that?
In my response earlier, I said it would be quite remote for a bank to take a guarantee that would be not negotiable, not transferable, that is subject to a suspensive condition, and provide funding associated with that.
But you cannot deny or accept that.
I don't have first-hand knowledge of that, sir.
If, sir, if on records, did you come across an information, I think Mr. Sartre must have said this, if I'm correct, he'll correct me. But I also had this information, that on the records of the public protector, the same 659 million is paid to OCM. Do you know that information?
Based on the report of the public protector, yes.
How did you hear about it?
On review of the public protector report.
What did you do after getting that?
Nothing, sir.
Did not raise eyebrows?
Sir, if you think about the original letter that was sent to us by the department that said...
No. Mr. Singh, they did not raise eyebrows.
Well, hence I'm trying to explain why it didn't.
Tell me why it didn't.
If you recall the original letter...
If you give people 659 million for... as a pre-what? Prepayment for... pre-purchase for coal, and that money is paid in the account of what you call of optimum.
So firstly, sir, you would recall that the public protector report came out way after the prepayment was made, and the prepayment was then settled through the delivery of coal. So from an Eskom perspective, the prepayment was recovered by the full delivery of coal.
Now,
where I'm sitting, so without taking a lot of time, because on the basis of your risk analysis, the basis of your analysis is hollow based on the questions I've said. Fortunately, you have accepted a number of those issues, which were key in making a sensible basis for your risk analysis and the proposal towards guarantee. It's a hollow stuff. Now, you came to Eskom which year?
1st of August 2015.
What are the state of finances in Eskom during that time? Because naturally, as a CFO, you must have done a walkthrough quickly. Maybe in a day or two, you've looked at the statements, general statement, expenditure, performance, financial performance, cash flow, balance sheet, and all those things. Quickly look at those things. What are...
I think, as I mentioned in the statement, so the financial sustainability of Eskom was significantly in question. Poor profitability, escalating cost of primary energy, tariff decisions from the regulator not being favorable, the new bill program being underfunded, liquidity problems existing within Eskom.
You must have put together a plan, did you?
Sir, yes, that was the plan that we put together for the corporate plan.
Where is that plan?
I'm sure it exists within Eskom. It does exist within Eskom, sir.
How long will it take you to share it with the committee?
We can provide it. I would just need to source it from...
By when?
What is today? Today is...
You can download it in your... Is that not... They will give you the email address.
No, the corporate plan is not a public document, sir. The corporate plan is not a public document.
Is this public?
The corporate plan?
Yeah. You say you can't share your corporate plan with this committee?
No. I'm not saying that, sir. All I'm saying is you're saying download it. I'm just saying it's not a document that is on the website because it's not a public document.
Now, how can you share it with us?
I will source it from Eskom and make it
by when can the committee get it?
Today is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at the latest.
Thursday? Why Thursday? Why not tomorrow?
We'll source it tomorrow and provide it to you, sir.
Thank you. Right. Tell me, in the that was 2015, am I right?
16,
17, that's 2 years, am I correct?
Yes, sir.
What were your achievements?
I think we've alluded to that in the statement, sir, which are tabulated.
You don't have to, those are your achievements.
Yes, sir.
You don't have to look at them in the... Those are your achievements.
Yes, sir.
It's only me who needs a record, not you, because those are your achievements. Tell us what are your achievements.
Increase in EBITDA, sir, increase in cash generated from operations, fully funded new build program, improvement in liquidity, significant cost savings, a reduction in the primary energy cost, reduction in diesel usage, increase in the EAF, or energy availability factor.
Wait. I'm not sure if you heard Mr. Gordon.
Sorry, I'm not sure.
Where we are sitting, Eskom is under threat for creditors to recall, what is due to them because of the state of Eskom financially. How do you reconcile what you say and with what I've just said now?
I think the threat of recall of the debts relates to not by and large the financial state of Eskom, but related to the governance issues in Eskom itself.
No matter what it's related to, the point I'm saying, the person who's supposed to watch financial performance of Eskom, the head of that is yourself, am I correct?
Yes, sir.
I'm talking about recall of money, which you are supposed to have been watching. And the point I'm making to you is that, do you agree that financially, Eskom is worse now than it was when you arrived in 2015?
Sir, I would say it's probably not, with respect.
Yes.
Yes, sir. I think the steps that government has taken to address the governance concerns of the lenders, I think will go a great way to alleviate the liquidity concerns that currently exist. I think the biggest challenge that Eskom currently faces, as I mentioned before, is trying to deal with the lower than anticipated tariff increase that they've got from NERSA, particularly over the last 2 years, being 2% and 5% respectively.
So my last point is that, so in your way of thinking, allow me to call it comic again. You believe that since 2015 when you came, Eskom is financially better.
As I said, the only reason I would suggest...
No. This is a straight question. Better or not?
I said it's better, and I was completely...
Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kungubele, Honorable Nobanda. beginning to think, alright, you don't want me to ask questions, but thank you. Mr. Singh, when we started your first comment, you went to page 32, topic 5. And as you were going, the first thing you said, the McKinsey and Trillian relationship was a complex relationship. Can you explain the complexity of that relationship?
I think what I meant to say was that I think it's a relatively simple relationship. I think the relationship is one of main contractor and subcontractor. I think what complicated it was the issues that emanated subsequent to that, associated with payments without contract, whether work was done, whether work was not done, the assertions from the Trillian employees, the assertions from McKinsey, the Budlander report, the G9 report. Those are the things that I was referring to in terms of that created the complexities around the McKinsey Trillian transaction.
Okay, it is understood that McKinsey reported to you directly in relation to the MSA agreement. Is this true?
They reported via the steering committee that was established to manage the implementation of the master services agreement. Mm-hmm. I chaired the steering committee.
So they didn't report directly to you and only to you?
No, ma'am.
What role did you play in direct payments by Eskom and Trillian?
I did not play any role in terms of the direct payments to Eskom or Trillian to Eskom.
So, as the CFO, there was no role for you within that transaction?
As I explained earlier in my testimony, the Eskom procedures and processes do allow for direct payments to subcontractors. If there was a concern that was raised or a concern that needed to be raised or addressed by the CFO, I would assume that would have been raised to me that I would then have attended to. But no concerns were raised to me once these payments were made.
In your view, was the MSA with McKinsey necessary?
In my view, yes, I think it was significantly necessary. I think if you look at some of the achievements that are listed in those 2 years or the two financial years, a significant portion of them all emanated from the MSA itself and the initiatives under the MSA.
So because of You are saying in your view it was necessary, right?
Yes, sir.
And it being, according to you, that MSA would address the issues that you raised on page 13 to 18?
In some way, shape or form, yes, ma'am.
Did that MSA address those issues?
In the 2 years that the team was on the ground, it did. We did see, as I said, an improvement in the energy availability factor. We did see an improvement in the liquidity. We did see us being able to manage the primary energy cost to acceptable levels. We stopped the usage of diesel. We saw increase in profitability as measured by EBITDA, as well as cash.
So if it addressed the issues, why then did you end up facilitating its
cancellation?
Yes.
I think the exact reasons are outlined in the statement itself. The first reason was the spiraling cost of this contract. I think when we chaired the STIERCO and understood the extent to which the contract was accruing value based on the benefits that were being derived by Eskom, the projection to the time the contract actually reached its maximum value would be an amount of at least 9 to 10 billion that would needed to have been paid under the MSA. Yes, there would have been significant value that would have been derived by Eskom, probably in excess of 100 billion rand worth of value. But for me, the concern was the fact that we were going to pay 10 billion rand under a professional services contract that was placed on a sole source basis. Also, the fact that the subcontractor arrangement with McKinsey and Trillion was terminated by that time. McKinsey couldn't find an appropriate subcontractor. And there were other concerns that we raised in the steer call relating to previous programs of this nature and how we were going to ensure that those shortcomings that were experienced in those programs were not being repeated in this program. But there was an intention for us to terminate the McKinsey contract and issue the work streams that were contained in the MSA to a broader range of service providers. So just not have one McKinsey, but have a number of McKinseys with a number of other potential BEE partners that they would come with, and not just Trillium.
So if that was your intention, then why didn't it happen?
I think, obviously, the whole issue of me being suspended, the McKinsey thing being cancelled, the Trillium thing being cancelled, and this whole I don't want to say soap opera associated with McKinsey, but the issue of using consultants in this circumstance became problematic in Eskom.
When is the exact date of cancellation of the MSA?
I think the date on which we signed the agreement, I think, was sometime in February 2016, I think it was, or 17. I will get it here. February 2017. Initiation date. The date on which we signed the agreement was, I think, December 2016 sometime. December 2016.
McKinsey paid for the services with the Eskom 2016-17 corporate plan.
16-17 corporate plan?
How much was it paid for that?
I would estimate it to be in the region of about 50 million, I think it was.
50.
Yes, 50 or 60 million.
Okay, so is that 50 million? Just now when Honorable Swart was asking you, you said the corporate plan was a two-page document. So how do you justify Eskom paying that much money for a two-page document?
Nothing.
Is it in line with your these PFMAs and everything, all these rules that you had to follow?
No, ma'am. I think what I tried to convey to the committee was that the previous year's plan was a two-page plan. When we engaged with McKinsey and Trillion to prepare the corporate plan with us, the funding plan was then around 20 pages or 22 pages, and it was a substantive document that was prepared in that year, and that is the document that we'll provide in response to the honourable member's question to provide the corporate plan for 15-16.
Mr. Singh, when you responded to this question, your words were, what would we expect of a two-page document? And we all raised eyebrows because we were asking ourselves, if Eskom can pay that much money for a two-page, what else is there that Eskom can pay? it means they just pay everything, anything and everything that comes their way, they just pay. Your words exactly, just that we can go back to the recording end. You said it is a two-page document plan. What did we expect?
Sorry.
It's okay. What exactly did Mackenzie do on the project? What was it that they did?
The outline of the McKinsey work streams is included in the MSA itself. I mean, in the section, yeah. By and large, they were looking at the Medupi claims, Medupi and Kusile claims. They were looking at the primary energy cost. They were looking at energy availability factors or in terms of improving generation and fleet performance. I think those were the main areas. And then the area that Trillian was looking at was together with them in all those areas, as well as the cash unlocking stream.
50 million to 60 million. That payment to McKinsey for the said work, was it justifiable? Would you say,
yes,
it was justifiable?
Yes, ma'am, I think it was certainly justifiable.
And from, December 2016 to February 2017, how many months is that?
No, ma'am, that's you asked the date for the MSA.
Yes.
When the Master Services Agreement was entered into, and that was terminated in February 2017. And the inception date, the date on which I think we signed the contract,
was
December 2015. Right. Then there was another contract that was entered into for the corporate plan.
Can you repeat?
There was another contract that was entered into for the corporate plan.
Uh-huh.
That dealt with the corporate plan deliverables. These were two distinct contracts.
So for the corporate plan, they paid 50 million to 60?
50 to 60 million, yes, I think.
Okay. Eskom has money, but today they don't have money. Can you explain your relationship with Trillian owners and associates when you were at Eskom? And during your time at Transnet?
As I explained before, regiments, I met Lita once or twice. Mr. Nibin Pillay, I interacted with on one or two transactions, but my main point of contact was Mr. Wood. When I moved to Eskom, again, my main point of contact was Mr. Wood. Yes.
What is your relationship with him now?
Again, as I said before, it's a relatively professional relationship. We don't have a personal relationship. We speak now and again, but that's it.
But he was your main contact then? I mean, if he was your main contact at Eskom and then when you went at Transnet and then again at Eskom, you must have had a certain relationship. It can't just be that you talk every now and then, or you don't talk.
No, I'm saying now, we talk now and again. But obviously when we were working on transactions, our interactions were quite frequent. And I would suggest that, you know, my interactions with Mr. Wood or Mr. Sagar was no different to any of the other interactions that I was having with maybe Deloitte or KPMG or Ernst & Young or the rating agencies or the banks for that matter.
Okay. Do you know a Mr. Musilo Motep?
Yes, ma'am, I know him.
What is your relationship with him or what was your relationship?
We met on a few occasions by virtue of the fact that she was working for regiments in Trillian.
What is your response to the claims that you help Trillian score deals by sharing inside info?
I categorically deny that. I have not and did not share any inside information with any supplier as it relates to any tenders that they were involved in. The only information that I do recall sharing with McKinsey or Trillion for that matter, or Regiments for that matter, was elements of the corporate plan, which I would do in the normal course of business with banks, rating agencies and the like, but that would have been after they signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Why do you think he would make such a claim about you?
Again, ma'am, as I alluded to earlier, in response to one of the questions, if any of these individuals, whether they work for Trillion or whether they work for McKinsey or whether they work for Deloitte, if they were those concerns, I think it was incumbent upon them to raise it directly with us, or if they were uncomfortable raising it with us, there was the tip-offs line that was available for them to raise those concerns. There was a group chief executive where they could raise those concerns. There was the board that they could raise those concerns with. So there were a number of avenues where those concerns could be raised, but none of those avenues were taken at the time.
Yes, I understand that there are avenues that he could have raised, but why? What do you think made him to raise such claims? I mean, somebody cannot just wake up one morning and decide to tell the world that you are selling information or you gave out information.
Well, as I said to you, I didn't deny providing information to Trillion. I didn't provide inside information, as she alluded to. I did provide copies of the corporate plan to Trillion, McKinsey, banks, rating agencies, and the like. So maybe she misunderstood the nature of the information that I was providing. I'm not too sure.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Nobanda. Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Mr. Singh. You know, I think you are dishonest, you are incompetent,
and you are a liar.
And I intend to prove that to you tonight. Let's start with the lies that you told Lynn Brown, that you did not pay Trillion any money. Lynn Brown said, on the submission that you made, you told her that you did not pay any money to Trillion. And your chairperson, Khoza, came here and said you lied. What do you say about that? Both of them, they said you lied.
So we've addressed this concern.
We're talking to your friends. I'm talking to you now.
Yes,
I need the answers now.
We addressed this concern earlier in the evening. As I said to you, the conclusion that I had misrepresented had been made when I was in suspension. I was not there. They had not addressed it with me personally. I explained to Honorable Mazzoni the circumstances and the responses to the questions.
Okay, let me ask you again. Did you say to them that you did not pay Trillion?
In specific response to the questions, yes, that's the responses that we provided.
You said to them you did not pay Trillion? Yes.
We did not pay Trillion because we did not have
a contract. That's what you said. I don't want any explanation. That's what you said. Now, as things stand, did Eskom pay Trillion? So you're a liar. That has been established. So they were correct that you lied. And that has been established. You are still continuing to lie. Okay, let's go to the next one. The payment that you made to Tegeta, the 585 million, are you aware that during the course of the day, before the meeting that happened at night to approve this 585 million, the Tegeta group were dismissed by the banks when they were asking for this 585 million? Are you aware of that?
I was not aware of the time.
Are you aware now?
I think through the public protector report and media reports, yes, I'm aware of that.
Okay. So you're saying you only got aware from the public protector's report that they were actually dismissed when they were asking for a loan from the bank. Is that what you're saying?
I'm asking. Okay, right. Now, tell me, you're saying the decision to pay this 585 million was based on the issues of securing the supply of coal. Was that based on facts or it was an opinion?
I think there was some assessment that was conducted in terms of the winter plan that the primary energy team would have conducted, and it indicated a shortfall of, I think, 2 million tons or something of that, you know, in that order.
So was it facts or opinion? That's what I'm asking. Because in effect, a statement that you can prove, was that facts or it was based on the opinion?
I'm saying that a calculation was conducted, so from that perspective, I would assume it's factual, based on the calculation that was conducted.
And you were satisfied with that that information that indeed this was to secure the supply of coal?
As I said, the calculation was done. I did not have sight of the calculation. It was done by the primary energy team, which indicated a shortfall in supply during winter.
Yeah, but that was given to you in your investigation that you had to report back. Were you satisfied that the that assessment, as you're saying, it was factual? So it was a correct one. That's why you gave your own report.
I did not say that I received the calculation. The calculation was conducted, the primary energy team identified the shortfall of 2 million tons. That was presented to the BTC, the Board Tender Committee, on the 11th, which interrogated it and was satisfied that there was a shortfall and a requirement for us to pre-purchase coal.
So we are talking of things that you don't know. It was not submitted to you, you've never seen it?
No.
Okay. During 2015, when we came in, when we came to ESCOM, as a portfolio committee of energy, yourself, Gogo, and Brian, you were presenting the recovery plan of ESCOM that you are operating on an 80-10-10 basis. 80% production and output, 10% planned and 10% unplanned. Is that how you recovered ESCOM when you guys came to ESCOM?
That's part of your question, sir.
Is that the plan that the three of you worked on to recover as a recovery plan at ESCOM? Because that's what you presented, and that's what the chairperson of the board presented as well, as saying this was a recovery plan, and that's what you worked on.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now you are saying the 585 million, it was to secure the supply of coal. You are saying the on your report here, ESCOM procures 120 million tons a year, ESCOM can be productive. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Out of the 585 that you wanted to secure the supply that was about to cause load shedding, what is the figure as compared to that 120 million?
I think the contract with Tegeta, I think, was with for 1.2 million tons.
So you got close to 180 million tons available. And then you go and hold meetings at night, you rush to do reports because you were trying to get 1.2 million to save ESCOM. Is that what you're saying?
No, sir. The 120 million tons is a amount that you would purchase over the entire year. So it's an annual purchase. It's not that we have 120 million tons of coal that's stockpiled somewhere.
Right. Okay. So for Tegeta, what duration is this? That is linked to this 585. The one that you're trying to secure, because your argument is that you paid Tegeta because you wanted to secure the supply of coal to avoid load shedding. So how long was this 585 going to last you?
That contract was for 6 months. I think it was from April to September. But I think the completed delivery of the coal in August.
So, 6 months, you needed only 120 million tons that you got for a year. So, in 6 months, the whole ESCOM was going to collapse. There was going to be load shedding. So, you needed that injection of 1.2 million.
Based on the calculations that were conducted for the winter plan assessment, yes.
The ones that you did not see?
Yes, sir.
What are your break-even projections in terms of your purchase of coal? That you know that this is our break-even. Once we've got this coal, we'll be able to move.
So I think the operations guys would be probably better placed to answer that question. But
we are the one who's the CFO. We should know the break-even, because that's what informs how do you plan and do your check and balances in terms of how much you're going to spend to run that company.
Yes, at a macro level I do, but at a micro level I don't.
Yeah, but that's why I'm asking, because here you're telling me that you're spending 50 billion a year,
yes,
on coal.
Yes.
Now, on the 50 billion that you spend, you had to rush and pay again 585 million to take Tegeta, because the whole 50 billion that you had that you had to use, it was not going to help you. Eskom was going to collapse if you did not spend that 545 million. You had over 50 billion to use.
I don't think it was a case that Eskom was going to collapse, but there would have been a security of supply risk at the Hendrina Power Station, and that was what the winter analysis indicated, that shortfall of 2.2 million tons.
So you still adamant that the 5% or 6% of Tegeta's contribution to the whole 120 million tons is the one that saved Eskom?
No, sir. I think it was basically getting an understanding.
When did you pay this money? After you were told on the 12th that it was to whatever investigation that you were doing, when did you pay them?
I think the money was paid on the 13th.
So on the 12th they gave you this, on the 13th you were ready to pay?
So I think the feedback to the BTC happened on the 13th. In relation to the three things that they asked me to do, they provided me with the approval to conclude a security agreement. We concluded the security agreement and post that was paid. I think it was paid on the 15th or so.
Right. I dealt with your lies. Now let me deal with the issue that you are dishonest. Brian Molefe, you worked with him at Transnet.
Yes, sir.
Is he an honest guy?
Yes, sir.
Is he a credible person?
Yes, sir.
Right. When you both moved to Eskom, there was a perception that you and him, you are taking instructions from politicians in terms of what needs to do and what business that you need to award contracts. Is that perception, is that correct?
No, sir.
Would you agree with me that in the interest of making sure that the state-owned companies, they operate, politicians, they must stay away from them. In the interest of governance, do you agree with me?
Yes, sir.
Do you agree with me that politicians, they must not be involved, especially in the executive positions of the SOEs, so that they can be able to operate? Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Brian Molefe left Eskom and then he came back on the, he said he's a credible guy. Was he good for Eskom? Maybe let me ask that.
Yes, I think he's a good leader.
I'm talking specifically for Eskom. Was he a good leader?
Yes, sir.
All right. When he came back on the 12th of May, 2017, how did you feel about that?
I think when he...
There was a huge rally there. You were dancing. Most of you there. Were you part of that rally that was welcoming him? You were
no,
not there?
No.
But how did you feel about it when he was coming back to Eskom?
Well, on the day that he decided that he was leaving Eskom, I did tell him...
No, on the day of return, when he was returning.
Yeah, well, I'm explaining to you, the day he left, I said to him that it was a bad decision.
But you can't explain what I did not ask. I asked you on the day of returning.
I was glad that he was back, sir.
You were glad that he's back. Why?
Because I think he was good for the organization, as I explained, and he would provide the necessary leadership.
All right. What is a politician?
I guess individuals like yourself, sir.
The people that get deployed to parliament by political activists by their organizations.
Yes.
When Brian Molefe returned to Eskom, was coming from parliament.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir.
And then you just told me that, in your own view, it's good that politicians, they don't get involved in the executive running of the state-owned company. So what made you happy when a politician came back to be the CEO of the company?
So I would assume that he would have resigned his position at in Parliament.
So he was no longer a politician when he came back?
Well, I would also argue...
What is a politician?
So I would also argue that he was actually a politician when he was a transit.
So he was only a politician for 3 months when he came here. When he went back, he was no longer a politician.
No, sir. I'm trying to say that he was actually, he is an ANC member.
Is he a politician?
I would hazard to say no, sir.
But he came to Parliament, and then you said people who are politicians are people like us. He came as an MP.
Yeah, as I said, I think he was only here for 3 months. And
So to be a politician, how long you must serve in Parliament?
And he resigned, sir. So.
So when we resign, we stop being politicians. You are dishonest, and I don't know what to smile about. Because this is an organization that employs 41,000 people. Are you aware of that?
I agree, sir.
And we are playing games with it. I told you that you are a dishonest person. I asked you your views about politicians. Now a politician comes back, you are saying we are excited, we are happy about it. Let's go to the issues of your incompetency. That's the third one. You're saying under your leadership you paid about 6 billion to companies without valid contracts. Is that correct?
So that analysis was conducted, but it was for the year 2015.
Yeah, it was conducted by who?
Some consultants.
It's not in the AG's report.
Sorry?
Or in your audit report. It's not there.
No, sir. As I explained.
It's not a finding in your audit report.
No, it's not there, sir.
It's not. All right. Let me tell you what is on your audit report. Irregular expenditure. It moved from 106 million to 4 billion. Can you tell us what happened when you moved from 100 million to 1 billion? What did you do about it?
We certainly undertook a exercise to raise awareness relating to PFMA compliance. That awareness actually resulted in the increase in the numbers because there was significant amount of training that was undertaken.
So you raise awareness because you want to stop irregular expenditures and then it just increases?
Well, the fact that you make people aware of what irregular expenditure is actually results in them reporting more irregular expenditure. So whenever you train someone, you would expect that there would be an increase in the number of contraventions, and once they get trained and understand how to prevent them, then there would be a decrease in the number of contraventions.
So it moves from one, so you made people aware, you trained them, and then from 1 billion it went to 2 billion.
Yes, sir, because of
and
the
then billion. What happened there?
I would assume that the training...
Do you know what were the major transactions that made this this irregular expense?
It was disclosed in the financial statements, I think.
No, but I'm asking you.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you tell this committee?
I think
now.
The biggest one was the check transaction that is mentioned in the statement, which was a contract that was entered into in 2012 or 2013. 1.5 billion rand in irregular expenditure and about 700 million in fruitless and wasteful expenditure, if the numbers are correct in the statement.
From 3 to 4?
I think, again, check was one of them. I don't recall the others, sir.
Wasteful expenditure, 93 to 500 million. What happened?
Part of that was a carryover of Sheikh.
That's what?
Previous. Part of that was also the Sheikh contract, sir.
Okay, let's go back to Dubai. What is the name of your travel agent?
Travel Excellence.
Your travel agent, they issued an invoice to Sahara, and you were made aware of it. And then you're saying Sahara did not pay your invoice. Did you ask your travel agent why did they issue an invoice to Sahara?
No, the travel agent did not issue an invoice to Sahara. The the invoices that were presented today.
Where was it coming from?
Were from the hotel.
To Sahara. Yeah, but the whole thing was arranged by your travel agent. The whole trip. Did you ask your travel agent what is happening?
Not as yet, because as I said, the...
When were you made aware of this?
Sorry?
When were you made aware of this, of this invoice? That is, was it the first time today?
Basically, as I testified earlier, it was the first time we've looked and interrogated the invoices.
How much was the cost of your trip to Dubai at that time?
Well...
That was arranged by your friend?
The one for... The one that was presented to us, I think, was for 20,000 dirhams, which is about 60,000 rand.
60,000 rand?
Yes, sir.
You said, I think Honorable Kodani asked you that, do you know how many downgrades you got at Eskom?
I think he pointed out that there were two, sir.
But I'm asking you, do you know them? Do you know?
I thought there were one, but I think the Honorable Member is probably correct.
Okay, when you asked about this travel, you said part of your meeting, you were meeting rating agents in Dubai. Which one of those that are in Dubai?
Standard & Poor, sir.
Standard &
Poor.
Oh, okay. Eric Woods, you're saying you knew him when you were still at Transnet?
Yes, sir.
Salim Issa, you were still at Transnet? When you get to know of him?
Yes, sir.
Vikash, you were still at Transnet?
Yes, sir.
The Gupta brothers, were you still at Transnet?
By and large, yes, sir.
Leader of regiments, you're still at Transnet?
Yes, sir.
Right, and then you moved to Eskom?
Yes, sir.
While you were at Transnet, did they do business with Eskom very good?
I think they did, sir.
No, but you know, you must not think. Because I don't think you've got a capacity of thinking.
Well,
because the fact that you can pay 1.6 billion to Trillion and Mackenzie, and then they come back tomorrow and say we can set that money, we can pay that money back, it's a sign that it's a company that is not run by people that can think. So let's leave the thinking. I'm asking you, Eric Woods.
I was not
at that time.
I was not an Eskom, sir, so I don't know.
You don't know. Now, yeah, but you got to Eskom and you had the privilege of going through their contracts. Did they head work before you went to Eskom?
I did not have the privilege of going through the contracts.
So you did not go through the contracts of Mackenzie when you were in Eskom? You did not see any of them?
No.
But you know that they were paid by Eskom?
No. Let me understand your question correctly, sir.
Right.
You asked,
I'm
when
asking
I got
you that
to Eskom, did I review the contracts?
No, not review. To have access to their contracts. Just to see when did they start working at Eskom?
No, I did not.
Have you seen their contract with Eskom? The one that was terminated. You said you terminated a contract.
Yes.
Mackenzie. Did you see? When
yes.
did it start?
Sorry?
When did it start?
It was signed in December 2015.
You're in Eskom?
Yes.
Is that their only contract you got?
Yes, and the corporate plan contract was signed by Mr. Koko.
No, but I'm saying, is that the only contract that they have that was signed in 2015 December?
No, the corporate plan also was...
When was it signed, that one?
I think it was September 2015.
When did you arrive in Eskom?
August 2015.
So you know someone at Transnet who never had a contract with Eskom, and then you move from Transnet to Eskom. A month later, the same person that you know has got a contract with Eskom. Is that a coincidence or what? They were just looking for work, and they just a month when you arrived, and that's when they started getting contracts at Eskom.
No, I think the. The Eskom, I mean the Trillion contract for the corporate plan was as a result of McKinsey getting the main contract, and McKinsey was in Eskom since 2011 or 2010, so they have been in that environment for a very long period of time.
What is Salim Issa's company? Was a part of Trillion? Part of Trillion.
I'm not aware.
You're not aware.
Yeah, I was going to say that I know that he was a shareholder of Trillium, but I'm not aware of any of his other companies.
Okay, let's leave it that. Impulse International, it's owned by Majela Gogo's stepdaughter. It had a contract of $1 billion with Eskom. Are you aware of that?
Through the media reports, yes, sir.
When were you made aware by media reports?
I think when the first reports associated with the...
Yeah, when was that?
I can't recall, sir. But it must have been, I would assume, in...
The CFO, when the media stated that and you made aware, what did you do? Did you go and check this Impulse International contract within ESCO?
Yes, I think it was not me. I think the group...
No, I'm asking you. Did you go and check as a CFO to say, what is happening in my company? Here is an acting CEO. There's an allegation that her daughter has got work of over $1 billion that you've already paid, by the way. And when the media made you aware, did you go and check if that contract exists?
Yes, we did check the contract. And then? Existed. I guess Mr. Coco was then put on suspension. The acting chief executive at the time instituted an investigation that was conducted into Impulse International.
Did you ask Mr. Coco, since you were colleagues, that was he aware of this thing?
Sorry?
Did you ask Mr. Coco that was he aware of this contract? Colleagues, when you were made aware of it?
No, I did not.
Why? I mean, he's your colleague. You just spent R1 billion to a stepdaughter.
I think he was placed on suspension at the time, and we were not allowed to engage with Mr. Coco.
Ingrid, some surname that I don't know, they're saying it's Lynn Brown's partner. She had a contract as well of $1.2 million. E-Smart Solutions, do you know about it?
No, sir.
You've never heard of it? It's the first time you hear about it today?
Yes, sir. Well, I've heard about it in the media, but I do not recognize the name, sir.
This company doesn't have work with Eskom, this is smart solution.
I would not know, sir.
What do you mean you wouldn't know? You can't check?
I think the allegation surfaced when I was on suspension, so I would not have the ability to have checked it at the time.
Finally, did you meet the governor there today? What's his name? There are too many, man, and they are not all honest. The guy resigned today. He was the head of HR or something. What's his name? Who? Presh. Did you meet Presh when you were suspended?
In
Hyde Park Hotel.
Sorry?
Did you meet him when you were suspended at Hyde Park Hotel in Johannesburg?
Yes, I did, sir.
Why? What was the conditions of your suspension? We're not supposed to meet your conditions of suspension.
At the time that I met him, sir, I was not on suspension. I was on special leave, and there was no restrictions at that time on me meeting ESCOM employees. Yes, I do agree that once I was on suspension, there would have been a requirement for me not to engage with ESCOM employees or suppliers, which without permission.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Gabas. Ganga Gabas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mr. Sue. In December, you gave us the copies of your submission that it was announced that there were 400 pages. And during our recess, we went through that those submissions, that report, and I discovered that together with the attachments, that's about 600 pages. I can see here now also you have a stack of documents. You provided us with certain attachments, but you did not provide us with other important attachments, and Advocate Vanara was able to isolate some important ones. But we'll come back to that. I just want to, firstly, for you to explain to us how many senior managers and middle management that reported to you when you were CFO of Eskom?
In terms of general managers, I had one, two, three, four, five, six, about seven.
Middle management? Senior or middle?
I would be guessing if I told you, ma'am.
Estimation?
Let's say for each of those seven, there were five, so it might be 35.
35. So that's your cream of your branch or your department or a branch, whatever
yes.
you may call it at the company Eskom. So on the submission that you gave us and today's interaction with yourself, it became clear that there were a number of supply chain processes that were not followed on a number of projects at Eskom. As a result, you received some and also deemed to be irregular expenditure in terms of the finances of those projects and the payment thereof that were done to contractors. You were saying earlier on with the advocate that you had to depend on number of people or officials that were working with you within that branch or department. Did you take any steps against those officials that were involved in this irregular expenditure for those projects that were deemed to be paid and classified as irregular expenditure?
Yes, I actually did, together with the head of audit and forensics, which is the internal audit function within Eskom. When I got there, the People and Governance Committee was very concerned relating to the number of disciplinary inquiries that were significantly in excess of 3 months and 6 months and 9 months. So there was a requirement and instruction from the committee for us to address that quite urgently. We addressed that and reduced that quite significantly and reported back to the People and Governance Committee. A big portion of those related to, as we said, the PFMA contraventions. We also instituted a requirement that there will be no condonations of PFMA contraventions without, one, an improvement plan relating to the process weaknesses that existed that resulted in the PFMA contravention, and also an indication of whether disciplinary action was taken, and if no disciplinary action was taken, why no disciplinary action was taken.
What punitive measures were taken, to be specific, and to how many?
I would have to source that information for you, ma'am. I don't have that information offhand.
But can you just estimate for us?
I would really be guessing, ma'am.
You don't even recall one or two?
It was certainly more than one or two or three in the first instance that I mentioned. I think that would probably have been in the region of about 15 to 20. The backlog.
What type of punitive measures that you've taken?
That would be in the domain of HR. HR would need to discipline the individuals in question. We'd have to get that information from ESCO.
But as a line manager, you are informed of the decision taken against your official, whether some were fired.
You see, Madam Honourable Member, the PFMA contraventions and those issues that I mentioned don't emanate from finance individuals. They emanate from line individuals that manage the contract, that place the contract. They emanate from procurement individuals, for example. They may emanate from HR individuals. So those contraventions don't necessarily emanate from finance staff itself.
No, I understand that, but now I'm focusing on the finance staff that authorize invoices in terms of payment that were made.
Okay, in terms of the finance staff itself, I don't think there were any disciplinary action taken against individuals that authorized the invoices. As I said before, there is a process, an acceptable process within ESCOM that enables for subcontractors to be paid directly. It is called a partnering process, and there are certain rules that apply as to how that would happen.
Okay, now let's come to yourself now, sir. Are you familiar with this booklet?
Yes, ma'am.
How often do you read it?
I would say probably once in 3 months, once in 4 months.
This is a guide for you as a finance person. And as a highly qualified financial guru who is a CA, you should always come closer to this so that you don't jeopardize your profession and your experience and your skills in the process of implementing your duties. So I take that you know this Bible throughout as it is a Public Finance Management Act. You know it from chapter 1 to the last chapter.
But if you
don't remember it every day, you always have to consult with the relevant chapters of your daily duties. Would you agree with me?
Yes, ma'am. Not only that, we also have specific individuals within the organization that are tasked with PFMA compliance.
Together with your Company Act and Treasury regulations that are based on
Yes. The
PFMA, and then lastly, the very important Bible of our country, our Constitution.
Yes, ma'am.
In relation, how do we govern our country and how do we spend the monies that are governed by us on behalf of the nation. It's famous, it's called public purse.
Yes.
And let me just take you through on the sections that are more relevant on your guarantees that you issued on a 1.68 billion. That in terms of Section 66 of the PMFMA, it only gives the board as the only competent to authorize issuance of the guarantee, and the board did not do so in the relation of ESCOM. Would you agree with that?
Honorable Member, I do not agree. The PFMA does make allowance for a Schedule 3 public entity such as ESCOM to delegate that authority to individuals within the organization. And in this case, the authority that was given to me by the board enabled me to execute all and any aspect of the transaction, and that was confirmed by the company secretary as well.
How come then the investigations that were done internally at ESCOM within your legal department found that you were not authorized by the board to take such an action. The board did not approve for you to take such an action.
I'm not aware of the investigation that was undertaken by legal. The head of legal, that was the company secretary at the time, Ms. Daniels, confirmed to me that I did possess the appropriate authority. She again confirmed the specific authority with the bank when the guarantee was placed with the specific bank, and I have attached in the documentation a legal opinion sourced that confirms that I did possess the necessary authority to issue the guarantee.
When were you suspended? Can you please remind me?
Special leave, I think it was the end of July, and then suspension, formal suspension, I think third week of September.
Where were you in during August? Were you from special leave back to work and
no.
then get suspended in September, or
no.
It was a special leave followed by
special leave converted into suspension.
Special leave take you to August and then in September
yes.
suspended. Do you know Mr. Abdul Aziz Lather, if I pronounce it correctly? Pardon me if I don't. Am I correct in relation
Mr.
to
Lahir,
you?
Yes.
Hmm?
Mr. Lahir.
Lahir.
Yes.
Okay. Thank
yes.
you very much. Do you know him?
Yes, I do.
Is it him or her?
Him.
Him. Thank you. Are you aware that he is your group compliance manager?
Yes, he is.
Are you aware that internally they've conducted certain investigation and they fall under legal department?
Yes.
Do you agree that they fall under legal department?
Yes.
And then their opinion that is dated 10th August 2017. Are you aware that that opinion is the one that says you were not authorized by the board to authorize the issuance of the guarantee of that said amount?
No, ma'am, I'm not aware of that.
Then I take that. I think you are aware that you have conducted some irregularities and you perform certain tasks without authorized. Because if you didn't, why would you resign?
Because
before you get fired. Because you are innocent, why do you have to resign?
Well, that was my contention as well. I was waiting for charges to be put to me. Charges were not put to me. I actually offered to resign in September. That was rejected by the company. I then said, fine, if you guys are investigating, we'll wait for charges. I waited for charges. No charges were forthcoming. I even requested that of the ex-chairman. And then government issued a statement to say, you know, leave immediately. So I left immediately.
Do you recall what the PFMA says about the person who omitted such an offense and found in breach of that clause or found guilty? Are you aware what the PFMA says in relation to officials and entities of public entities and major public entities of government?
Relating to which breach, ma'am?
Yes, the one that I've referred to, issuance of guarantee.
I think there is a sanction relating to financial misconduct, which would attract a jail sentence, I think.
Let me remind you that you'll be found guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to say to you that your company did found you guilty and made certain recommendations for you to be charged. As it is said here on the PMFMA. And it says the GCFO is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years in terms of Section 86(3) of the PMFMA. Criminal charges will be required to be laid against the GCFO to give effect to this provision of the PFMA, as I read it out to you. In terms of the Treasury Regulation 32.21, which is part of regulations issued by National Treasury in terms of Section 76 of the PFMA on the 15th March 2005, the Board must advise the Auditor General, ESCOM Executive Authority, which is the Minister of Public Enterprises and National Treasury, of any criminal charges it had laid against any person in terms of Section 86 of the PFMA. That's the recommendation to the Board about yourself, sir. Do you still maintain that there were no wrongdoings from your part at ESCOM?
Madam Chair, as it relates to the guarantee, Honourable Member, as it relates to the guarantee, I was assured that I did have the necessary or requisite authority to issue the guarantee by the Group Company Secretary and legal at the time, Ms. Daniels. That was again reconfirmed submission to the bank at that point in time. So for all intents and purposes, I was under the impression that I had and possessed the requisite authority to issue the guarantee. If there is a contrary view at this stage, we'll have to deal with that then.
But also there were other opinions that were raised by some professors in the company. They also arrived at the senior...
Your mic, Che.
Thank you, Che. I'm saying also there were other opinion that were arrived at by other consultant that were hired by ESCOM as the advocate earlier on alluded to, and they did arrive at a similar conclusion, if not the same, at a similar conclusion based on the PMFMA regulations. So with that, I take that really deep down in your heart and in your mind and in your good soul, you are aware that you breach certain regulations of the PMFMA. But you are really, as my other colleagues have indicated, seated there under oath, you are still misleading us in relation of your contribution towards the irregular expenditures at ESCOM. Would you maybe, as the last chance, I might be the last member to interact with you before the closing by the chair of the inquiry. Maybe have a change of heart and accept certain responsibility and apologize. This is the opportunity for you to do so. Because we have reminded you, all of us, almost all of us, of what transpired at Eskom.
I think, honorable member, in terms of me still misleading the committee, having done everything that I've done in terms of providing the documentary evidence to suggest what my role in these transactions were, I think they are factual. If at this point in time there is contrary evidence to suggest that there was wrongdoing on my part, I'm happy and willing to engage with that finding. As I said to you, I was not aware of Mr. Lahair's assessment that was conducted. The company had not provided that to me, so I was not aware of that. If there is, as you say, a transgression of the PFMA, I'm happy to engage with the company further. In terms of an apology, Madam Chair, again, honourable member and members, to the extent that we have, or I have, in some way, shape or form, contributed to the downfall of Eskom, I do apologize sincerely, not only to the committee, but to the citizens of the country, by and large. But I have tried to do my best in terms of being able to turn around and create an environment that is sustainable for Eskom into the future. If I failed in that, then I do apologize in failing in that duty.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Kanga Qabashe. I'm not going to keep you for too long here. I've just got few questions. They won't take 15 minutes, provided we are given the satisfactory answers. Mr. Singh, because the FMA is giving you a permission that you can take decision without without maybe consulting the board members or anyone else, you took advantage of that and you were taking decisions on your own on everything, on every contract that comes your way into Eskom, and sign any contract that comes your way. Because according to what Honorable Mganga Qabashe has just read from the PFMA, you responded by saying the very same PFMA is giving you a permission not to go that route that she is reading. Do you agree with me that you took advantage of that clause and then you took decision on your own without involving anybody else?
Honorable Madam Chair, I respectfully disagree with you. I did not abuse the provisions of the PFMA, and I certainly did not take decisions on my own. As outlined in the documents, decisions were taken by the relevant delegated authority in each of the cases for each of the transactions.
Can you tell us how many accounts do you have overseas, bank accounts that you have overseas?
As I've alluded to earlier in the testimony, I do not have any bank accounts overseas. And we've made that declaration to, certainly I have made that declaration to the South African Reserve Bank on inquiry.
How much money have you, did you transfer to overseas banks that belong to Eskom? Who should, or do you think that if there is any money that belongs to Eskom that you have transferred to any overseas account, would you suggest anybody that we can approach so that we get that money back?
Well, I'm not aware of any money that is due to Eskom from overseas bank accounts, but we do make payments to overseas bank accounts as Eskom, and there will be many of them, whether they be suppliers or repayments of loans, interest, and the like. But I'm not aware of any amounts that needs to be refunded to Eskom from those overseas suppliers.
So all those transactions were legal?
In my view, yes, ma'am.
To bring to your attention that you signed a binding term sheet. Do you remember that? That now Eskom is sitting with a 400 million that Eskom has to pay.
That's the document that that Advocate Barana had provided to me.
You only knew about it when Advocate Vanara was giving it to you?
No, I was aware of it when I signed it as well, Madam Chair.
Okay. Then now that you are aware of the economic situation within the company, what do you think about the agreement the agreement that you signed, or the binding term sheet that you have signed?
Other than the let's call it the concerns that were raised by the legal team that was reviewing the contract, I think the terms and conditions of the contract was explained to the Finance and Investment Committee by the Treasurer at the time. They believed that the transaction was of value to Eskom, and hence we pursued the transaction. So, Madam Chair, as I understand it from one of the documents that Advocate Varana had presented to us, is that the Eskom team is still negotiating with the potential provider of the funding. So I'm assuming that, and this again, I'm assuming this, given the fact that I've not been there since July, that the term sheet is still up for negotiation as well.
I've just sent a document to you. There's a letter written in that. Can you read that for the committee? It is coming, committee, it is coming from Ms. Pamensky.
Should I read?
It is also one of the Gupta leaks emails that have come out.
Should I read, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay.
Read.
Hi, Chair. Congratulations, Mazel Tov, on brilliant and well-thought-out planned and strategized acquisition of the Optimum Group of Companies. Well done. I am proud of you all. This is only the beginning of the resource group growth and many more to come into play. I am more than sure that you and the team will make a huge success of this acquisition. I wish you all the success on the deal. Hard work begins now, and we as a team will produce the results. Let me know when you are ready to discuss operational implementation. I am truly proud to be part of this group. Enjoy and well-deserved holiday. Mark.
Do you know anything of that email?
No, ma'am.
You don't know? You don't know that email at all? You have never met any document that has got that letter?
No, ma'am.
Thank you very much for your response. I think my questions were few questions, because the most of my questions were asked by the members. Let me take the opportunity to thank everybody that is inside here. Members, you have been very efficient on your questions, and you have done a very good work over the holidays. You were not relaxed. I can see you read all the documents that were given to you. Thank you very much for the work well done. Tomorrow, and thank you very much from the legal team and Mr. Singh for coming to the inquiry. I want to say to the members, it was a long day. We won't be able to start at 9:30 tomorrow. Today. Can we then start at 11 o'clock? 11 o'clock. Can we start at 11 o'clock? Is it fine to start at 11 o'clock? We are going to send an SMS to Mr. Matsela Koko. We're meeting Mr. Matsela Koko today at 11 o'clock. The meeting for today is adjourned.